Last week I gave out copies of the actual Hakdamot and Pirush Mishnayos. This week I'm just giving you my outline. I wrote an 8-page outline of the Hakdama. It's as brief as I was able to make it. You know, it's not a short Hakdama. So we got through the first half of the Hakdamot and Pirush Mishnayos. Last week we discussed how Torah Shebal Peh was originally taught. We had a long conversation about Nevuah. We had a conversation about Machlokas and its role in our Mesorah, whether that reflects a weakness in our Mesorah or not. The answer is not. And we went through the order. And now, today, we start with the order of the Mishnayos. The Rambam says, okay, so we have this Rabbi Yehuda Anasi. He decided to put together all of the, because people were forgetting things, and he had to arrange all of the teachings that were transmitted from generation to generation, Balpeh. So he decided to make an organized book out of it. It wasn't just going to be a random list of thousands and thousands of teachings. That would be ridiculous. That would be impossible to write something like that, for anyone to study that in a normal way. So he decided to make Shisha Siddharim, to make six Siddharim of Mishnah. So the Rambam spends a good deal of time discussing why the Siddharim are in the order that they're in, meaning why 1 through 6, why do we start with Zohar and end with Taros, and then within each one, why the order of the Masechtos within each one. So it's this is a good thing to know. Obviously the Rambam thought it was important to know why the Masechtos are set up the way they are. Now it should be noted, I'll point out, that Tosfos points out in a couple of places in Shas that the rule of Stam v'achar kach machlokas, or machlokas v'achar kach Stam, doesn't apply across Masechtos. Meaning the rule is that if you have a machlokas in a Mishnah, and then later on you have a Stam Mishnah that goes like one side, and that machlokas we pass on like that side of the machlokas that the Stam Mishnah goes like, because we assume that Rabbi Yehuda Anasi originally taught it as a machlokas, but then decided how to paskin, and therefore he wrote it as a Stam Mishnah later on. If you have a Stam and then a machlokas, so you don't paskin like the Stam Mishnah, because Rabbi Yehuda Anasi originally wrote it as a Stam, but then he realized that there was another opinion, so he later wrote it as a machlokas. So it could be medayik from the order with which Rabbi Yehuda Anasi wrote things. But says Tosfos in a couple of places, that's only within a single masechta. But from masechta to masechta, you cannot be medayik anything from the order. So if you have in maseches Bab Metzia a machlokas, and then in maseches Sanhedrin a stam that is not called stam v'achar kach machlokas, you assume that we have to figure out how to paskin, but we don't know which one Rabbi Yehuda Anasi really said first. But wait a second, the Rambam spends all this time going through how Rabbi Yehuda Anasi put the Mishnayos specifically in this order. So what does it mean? That how can you say that it's all random, that Rabbi Yehuda Anasi from Masechta to Masechta it wasn't put in order? So no, what it means is that Rabbi Yehuda Anasi set up this order for the book, but he didn't tell you that you necessarily have to study it in this order. In fact, when he would learn it in yeshiva, he would pick a yeshiva masechta each year that he would learn that, but it didn't necessarily, or each zman or whatever, probably more than one a year, but each zman they would pick a yeshiva masechta that they would learn and that he would teach. So the order that he taught it in is not necessarily the order that he wrote it in or that he arranged it in after he wrote it. So when he wrote it, he was writing it as he was teaching it, but then he arranged it afterwards in this specific order. So we cannot be medayik about stam v'achar kach machlokas, machlokas v'achar kach stam, outside of a single masechta. Within a single masechta, it's pashut that he taught masechta beginning to end. He didn't just pick a mishnah here, a mishnah there, or go backwards, pick this parak and then an earlier parak. No, that obviously he went beginning to end through the whole thing. But that's just al derech hakdama. When we talk about the seder of things, we should realize this is the order that he put the book in. It's not necessarily the order that he learned in. So the order of the Shish Siddur Mishnah that Ram describes, Zroim comes first because it's Semach Ha'aretz Hu Mazon Achai. When you have things that grow from the ground, that's what nourishes people, and Avodas Hashem would be impossible if we don't have food. People need nourishment, so we start with the most basic support of our learning. The most basic support of our learning is food. So Zrayim, things that grow from the ground, that's where we get our food from. Good, so that's what we start with. Then we move on to Moed, because Moed is in Shmos Perich of Gimel, and right after it talks about Shemitah, and talks about working the land, it goes into the Parshas HaMoadim in Shmos Perich of Gimel, and then we go into the area of Mishpatim, and in the area of Mishpatim, we put women first, because of the order of the Pasuk. The Pesukim talk about women before it talks about other civil laws. V'chiyimkor ish es bito, v'chiyinotsu anashim v'nagfu isha, followed by v'chiyigachshar. V'chiyigachshar is after several psukim about women. So the first four siddharim, the Rambam just explained the order that they're in. All of them, says the Rambam, happen to be in Sefer Shemos. None of them, meaning them primarily, where in Chumash can you find the halachos of Zra'im, of Moed, of Nashim, of Nezikin? You could find it in Sefer Shemos. Kachim and Taros, primarily in Sefer Vayikra. It's interesting. Bereshis, very little halacha. Bereshis is Maisa Avos. Shemos, a lot of halacha. Vayikra, a lot of halacha. Devarim, we'll skip a minute for a second. Devarim is mostly about, it's a Mishnah Torah, it's a chazara of everything. What about Bamidbar? What's Bamidbar's role? We started Sefer Bamidbar yesterday. The Ramban and the Saktam, but Sefer Bamidbar says there aren't really too many halachas ledoros in Bamidbar. Bamidbar is to teach us about how important Seder is and how we have to respect Kedusha. And that's why yesterday we read about how the encampment was, where everybody had to know their limits and their boundaries, and when they're not allowed to encroach upon Kedusha, just like by Har Sinai, we weren't allowed to go up to the Har because the Shekhinah was there. We have to respect the presence of the Shekhinah, and only certain people in certain states of Tara are allowed to go there. But that's not really about Halachos Ledoros. So of the five books of Chumash, there are really only two that are primarily about Halachos, Shemos and Vayikra. And Shemos has the first four of the Shisha Sidre Mishnah, Vayikra has the next two. So why Kachim before Taros? So the Rambam says, very Pashut, Kachim is the first half of Sefer Vayikra. Taros, we don't get started on till Parsha Shemini. So that's why we're just following the order of the Pesukim. It's interesting, as the Rambam describes the order of all the different Masechtos, he doesn't stick with a single rule. I mean, it would have been nice if he would just say, we always follow the order of the Pesukim. So this is the rule, and that would explain everything. But it doesn't explain everything. So he has to come up with other factors. That ideally we like to follow the order of the Pesukim. Rabbi Danasi tried to make it sort of Ke'in Da'araisa, follow the way it has it in the Pesukim, but it's going to leave us a little bit lacking in our ability to explain the order if we only take into account the order of the Pesukim. So we have to take into account other things as well. So he has these Siddarim, and then after he created the Siddarim, Rambam says, Rabbi Danasi decided to create subcategories called Masechtos. Then he further divided it down into Prakim, and he called those Prakim. And then he further divided it down into what he calls Halachos. If you ever open up a Talmud Yerushalmi, you'll see by each Mishnah it says Halacha Aleph, and the next Mishnah Halacha Beis, because that's how Rabbi Danasi says the Rambam broke it down into Halachos. Now it's interesting, I've mentioned to you in the past that when you look at early printings of the Shas, before the Vilna Shas was printed, they put all the Mishnayos of a single Perek first, and then all of the Gemara, the whole Perek. That it wasn't broken down into Halachos, it was just broken down into Prakim. But Rabbi Danasi had broken it down into Mishnayos. Just when they published the Gemara, they put all those Mishnayos together again. It's unclear when Ravina and Ravashi arranged the Gemara, did they arrange it in that way? It seems from a lot of Gemaras, the way Ravina and Ravashi arranged it was just perek by perek, that they didn't arrange it based on halacha. Rabbi Yochanan, when he arranged the Yerushalmi, seems a little more that it was based on halacha, that it was based on that Mishnah, and that's it. Whereas in Bavli, maybe just because the nature of the Bavli is that it's so much more tangential. There are so many times we're discussing one Mishnah, we bring in the three next Mishnayos in the Perek, so it made more sense to learn the whole Perek first and then go through all of the Gemara. So I'm not certain about that, but it seems that's from the style, that's the impression you get from Shas, that Ravina Ravashi arranged the Gemara in the entire Perek at one time, did not break it down into the Halachos. So then the Rambam goes on and says, okay, now let's describe why each Masechta is where it is. So hang on, let's try to go through this quickly. Seder Zrayim, he says, Brachos comes first, because the first thing you have to do, if you were a doctor and a patient came to you and said he wasn't feeling well, I had a friend in college who went to the doctor, he wasn't feeling well. The doctor said, well, what do you eat on a typical day? And he said, what do you have for dinner on a typical evening? He said, usually four hot dogs broiled from the YU cafeteria. And he said, usually, how often is that? He said, six nights a week or so, five nights a week. He said, well, maybe we should start with that. Maybe that's where you're running into trouble. So the first thing the doctor would do is ask you what your diet is, ask you what you're eating. And that's the first thing we need to figure out in order to get a person onto a path of healthful living. So brachos is about food, the food that we eat spiritually, to make sure that the food that we eat is taken care of, we make a proper bracha, and that we appreciate the food that we eat. So it's really, the reason that I wanted to start with that is because food is our most most basic fuel. The same reason we start with Zrayim is because we need food in order to be Ovid Hashem. So we wanted to start with brachos on food. Elamai, if you're talking about brachos on food, you're not going to only talk about Birchos Hanen and not talk about Birchos HaMitzvah. So we got to talk about Birchos HaMitzvah also. What's the first bracha you make each day? What's the first Birchos HaMitzvah you make? Is the Birchos Kriyashma. But you can't talk about Birchos Kriyashma without telling us about Kriyashma. So we got to start with Kriyashma. So that's why we start Me'emesai Karnes HaShema. That's why we start with Shema. All because we want to talk about food. So that's how that's why we start with Kriyashma. Then we move on to Peya, because chronologically, when making food, Peya is the first mitzvah that you have in terms of what grows from the ground, because Peya is when you leave off a corner of the field before it's harvested, meaning you don't harvest the Peya, you just leave off a corner unharvested. All the other dinim, the karka, is after you harvest the grain, and you smooth out the pile, and you take the trumas and the mice. That's later on. Peya is before anything is harvested. So that's why we start with Peya. Then we move on to Demai, because just like Peya is for poor people, you leave the corner of the field for poor people, Demai is not really for poor people. Demai means when you buy produce from an Am Haaretz, you're not allowed to eat it. You have to be mafshir trumas and mice, as a din of tevel, unless you're an ani. Machilin is haniyim demai. Aniyim are allowed to eat demai. Ah, so since the exception to the yisur demai is an ani, the ani is allowed to eat demai. So we mentioned demai after peya, because peya is for aniyim also. After demai, we move on to klayim, because that's the order of the psukim. Then we move on to shvius, even though really arla should have been next, because arla is also about things that grow from the ground all the time, about fruits that grow from a tree, because arla is really for only for people who happen to plant. Shemitah, which is what shvius is about, is for everybody. Plus, shemitah seems to be more emphasized in the Torah based on the fact that it gets its own parsha in Parshas Bahar. Then we move on to truma, because that's the first of the matanos. Once you take in all the grain, you give truma to the kohen. Then ma'aser rishon, what we call masech Maisros, because after you give Truma Gedoli, you give Maiser Rishon. Then Maiser Sheni, because after Maiser Rishon, you give Maiser Sheni. And then Chala, because after you give all the Trumas and Maisros, then you want to grind up the wheat and make a dough and start baking some bread or making some cakes. So they have to be Mafresh Chala. So that comes chronologically next. And then we finally move all the way back to Arla. And what we did by delaying Orla till the end is that we separated grains on the one end from fruits on the other end. So we saved fruits for last. So Orla is about fruits, and so is Bikurim is about fruits. So we have Orla and Bikurim is both about fruits. And that's Seder Zrayim. That's the reason for the order of Seder Zrayim. So we move on to Seder Moed, which if you were arranging Seder Moed, and pretty much any Sefer that you look at that actually discusses halachos of the Moedim or inyanim of the Moedim, what's the order they normally put these Sfarim in? The order of the Moedim. It will either start with Rosh Hashanah and go through Rosh Hashanah, Yom Kippur, Sukkot, etc., Chanukah, Purim, you know, the Pesach, just go through the order of the Moedim, and that's the way the Shulchan Aruch has it. Shulchan Aruch arranged it in that way, in the order of the Moedim. Strange, the Rambam never entertains that possibility. Rabbi Danasi apparently never entertained the possibility that we should just go, I'll be the Seder of the Moedim. So what was Rabbi Danasi thinking? Why? What did he do with Seder Moed? So he starts with Shabbos. It makes a lot of sense. The first Moed you can start with the Shabbos. It's the holiest of all of them, and it's also the first one that appears in the Parsha of the Moedim. Is about Shabbos, and then you move on from Shabbos to Erevin, makes a lot of sense also, because Erevin is Hilchos Shabbos, and then after that, Pesachim. Why Pesachim? Because that's what Klal Yisrael had first. First Yom Tov we were able to celebrate as a nation was Moshe Rabbeinu told us all about Korban Pesach. We were still in Mitzrayim, so Pesachim makes a lot of sense. From there, I would have gone on the order of the Moedim, though. That's not what we do, though. After Pesachim, we have Mishnayos Shkalim. That's based on the order in the Pesukim, the Rambam says. And then we have Maseches Yuma, also based on the fact that Achremos, which is about Yom Kippur, is after Kisisa, which is about Shkalim. Now, really, we should speak about the rest of the Regalim, but there's one problem. What are the rest of the Regalim? We already spoke about Pesach, so what do you have left in terms of the Shalosh Regalim? You have Sukkot and Shavuos. Shavuos, there is no Masech, there's nothing to talk about. There are no mitzvos of Shavuos. It's just regular Hilchos Yantiv. Oh, so where do we have regular Hilchos Yantiv? That's Maseches Beitza. you have regular Hilchos Yantiv. So instead of a Maseches Shavuos, we have a Maseches Shavuos, but that's a different Masechta. Instead of, it's not about the Yantiv. Instead of a Maseches Shavuos, well, once we were learning Shavuos in the high school, we were discussing at a Rebbe's meeting the different goals that the different Rebbeim had for their Shir. So one of the Rebbeim was saying, I want every boy in my Shir to finish the Masechta. Another, I want them to know these 20 Sugyas cold. And one of them said, I want them to know by the end of the year that it's not about the Yantiv of Shavuos, that the Masechta is not about Shavuos. So there is no Masechta that's about the Yantif of Shavuos. So Masechta's Beitz is the one that really would be about the Yantif of Shavuos, because it's about Yantif in general. But Sukkah has more halachos in it that are related to the Yantif, so Sukkah comes before Beitzah. So we do Sukkah, then Beitzah. Now that we're done with the Regalim, there's only one Yantif d'Oraisa left that we haven't discussed, because remember we already covered Yuma also, based on the order of the Pesukim, and that's Rosh Hashanah. So it's very out of order, meaning we have Rosh Hashanah, we go from Yuma to Sukkah, to Beitzah, to Rosh Hashanah. It's a little bit strange in terms of the order of sequence in the year, but that's how the Rambam explains it's the only Yantif d'Oraisa left. Once we're done with d'Oraisa, so we move on to the earliest Takanos of Nevi'im, which is Tainios, that when there's no rain, you read in the Nevi'im, it talks about how they would have to fast. And after Tainios, we move on to a little bit later in the Nevi'im, Megillah, which is a little bit later on, and then Moed Katan, because Moed Katan is connected to Purim in that Chol HaMoed and Purim are both days that are asur to have hesped and asur to have tainus on, so they're thematically linked. And then finally we have Chagiga left. Why is Chagiga saved all the way to the end? Because it's only Kol Zechorcha, it's only for the men, it's not for the women, so since it only pertains to half of Klal Yisrael, we leave it for last. Good. Seder Nashim. Nashim is the most difficult one, I think, to explain the order. Yevamos, not Ksubas, starts Seder Nashim. So what's Yevamos about? Man dies, has no children, so his wife needs Yibum from the man's brother, right? Why would you start Seder Nashim? What would you have started Seder Nashim with? What's the first thing you need to know about Seder Nashim? What would you think would be the most logical place to start? I wouldn't have said Ksubas either. The Rambam thinks he has to explain. What? Kiddushin. Of course you start with Kiddushin. Where does Kiddushin come up in Seder Nashim? Dead last. So strange, right? What's going on over here? So the Rambam says, we start with Yevamos, not Ksuvus, as if, like, of course you would thought Ksuvus is where to begin. Why would you think Ksuvus? Ksuvus is, a Ksuvus is what you get at Nisuin. Before Nisuin, you have to have Kiddushin. I don't know why what the Avamin is. But he says, Yevamos, not Ksuvus, because Yibum is a Chiyuv, and Nisuin is a choice. Is that true? Meaning, granted, we want to put a chiyuv before a choice. Yibum, when a man's brother dies, rachmana litzlan, no children, brother has no choice, you got to do yibum or chalitza, those are your options. But you got to do something. Something that it says in Yevamos, you got to do. But ksuva, whether you want to do nisun or not, that's up to you if you want to do nisun or not. Really? A person could choose not to get married? Isn't there a mitzvah to get married? At least a hechsher mitzvah puruvu? So there's a major discussion in the Rishonim, the Mesechus Ksuvus, whether in fact it is a mitzvah / chiyuv to get married, or nah, you could always have pilagshim and you'll be yotze puruvu that way, and really there's no mitzvah to get married. But the Rambam seems to be saying, yeah, it's a choice. Maybe he means it's a choice in terms of who you marry, whereas by yibum you don't have a choice for who you marry. You have to marry the brother's wife and doesn't have any children. So good. So then we move on to ksubas after Yevamos, and then after that we move on to nedarim. Why? Because nedarim is also very much related to halachas about women. Meaning when one of the things that can completely destroy a marriage is a woman has a habit of taking nedarim. One of the women that's teitzei shelo b'ksuba, that you can divorce without giving her a ksuba, is an isha nadranis, a woman who takes too many nedarim. Bavo nedarim, the Gemara says, because of the avera of nedarim, banim mesim k'shem k'tanim, children die at a young age, so that's literally the most destructive thing to the family unit if the woman takes nedarim. And that's why the Torah empowers the husband with the right to be mefir nidre ishto, to undo his wife's nedarim. So nedarim is very much nashim related. Nazir is a type of neder, so nazir comes next, and the husband could be made for the nedarim as well. That was one of Rav Shechter's trick questions he used to always ask guys who were applying to the kollel. You have to have a bechin with Rav Shechter when you apply to his kollel, where he asks you random questions on different things in Shas, just different idios, kolios. I remember I was so looking forward to it because I heard all about these questions, and I went over to him. I said, I have to take a bechina for the kollel. He says, nah, I know you. You don't have to take a bechina. I'm so disappointed. I so wanted one. But anyway, Nazir, one of the questions he asked is, can a woman become a Nazir?
Sorry about you. How much longer are you going to be here? Because I rent something in just...
40 minutes.
Oh, okay. It's fine. The security's not here.
Right.
I told him we would be here this week, and he's not here.
He left. I'm sorry.
I'll have to wait till my phone will come.
Okay. Sorry. Okay, so Nazir is also included in the topic of in the topic of Nidarim, like we said. A husband can be made for Nidrei Ishto, so that's why Nazir comes. And then Gittin. Why Gittin after that? Because after marriage is divorce, and we described Yevamos and Ksuvos. Well, hopefully that's not the person's arc in life, is that they're planning on that, but it's if Gittin never comes, it comes after marriage. Sota, because it relates very much to Gittin. Why does one want to get divorced? Because his wife is unfaithful to him. That's a very strong reason to get divorced. One of the big kashas in Gittin is, why is it that the very end of Maseches Gittin first discusses what the proper excuse is to get divorced? Right? That should have been the beginning of Maseches Gittin, about what's a good reason to get divorced. It's the very last mission of Maseches Gittin. Afilu v'ketichat afshilo, afilu matzah acheres na'emena. That's at the very end of Maseches Gittin. Maybe just to juxtapose it with Sota, because the reason Sota is after Gittin is that Sota relates to one of the primary reasons one would want to get divorced. So the Rabbi Yehuda Anasi wanted to juxtapose the last Mishnah in Gittin with Sota, and Sota is not going to come before Gittin because Gittin is obviously more nogeya than Sota. It's a much more common thing than Sota is. Then finally, we get to Kiddushin. So ask the Rambam, shouldn't Kiddushin have been first? I mean, at the beginning he didn't mention that Kiddushin should have been first, but now he said, shouldn't it have been first? So he said, well, we couldn't put it before Ksuvos because we want to connect Yevamos and Ksuvos to each other. And Yevamos is a chiyuv, so Yevamos has to come before Ksuvos, so we can't put it in between Yevamos and Ksuvos, because Yevamos and Ksuvos are very much connected in that they both create Nisuin. When you do Yibum, or when you...
Rav Fogel asked me to ask you about the bar, your key to open the rooms, then we need the security, he's not here.
Yeah. When we do Yibum, it creates a sense of Nisuin. And when we do Ksuba, that's obviously all about Nisuin. So that's the link between Yevamos and Ksubas. Now, why not have it at least before Gittin? Kiddushin should come before Gittin. So the Rambam gives a very difficult answer. I don't understand what he's talking about. Rambam says, because the Pasuk says, V'kasav la sefer krisus, v'nasan bi'adav, v'shoch mi'beso, v'yatsav mi'beso, v'holcha v'haysa li'ish acher. And what happens first, it describes the get, and then at the end, v'haisali ish acher. And what do we have throughout Kiddushin and Gittin? The Gemara always has a drasha, makish havaya liyitzia. What's havaya? V'haisa. V'haisa is Kiddushin. Yitzia is Gittin. So v'haisa comes second in the pasuk, whereas Gittin comes earlier in the pasuk, right? What's the problem? How does the pasuk begin? How does that parsha begin about Gittin? Ki yikach ish isha. Right? A man marries a woman, so ki yikach ish isha is kiddushin. That's kiddusha kesef. We learn kiddusha kesef from ki yikach ish isha. So I'm not sure why dafka this order of dafka v'haisa is what represents kiddushin more than ki yikach ish isha is what represents kiddushin. Maybe one end with kiddushin to be mesayim b'davar tov, not to be mesayim with gittin, such a negative way to end, or with sota, an even more negative way to end. So to be mesayim b'davar tov, to be mesayim, just like each mesechta we find that the Amoraim tried to be mesayim b'davar tov, and the Tanaim also tried to be mesayim b'davar tov with if something was very negative, they would add in rotzakodesh baruch hu zakos yisrael v'chichir b'lem torah mitzvos, etc. Right? They'll always try to add in something cheerful at the end. So maybe that was the svara to put kiddushin at the end. You don't want to end with a topic like Gittin or Sota. I don't know. The Ram does not say that. The Ram says it was just there's nowhere else to put it. It's got to come after Gittin based on the order of the pasuk. Okay, moving on to Seder Nezikin. So he says Seder Nezikin, first Masechta is not Bobakama. First Masechta is called Maseches Nezikin, and there are 30 prakim in it. It's the combination of Bobakama, Bamtzia, Bobasra, We have just subdivided it into three. First one about nezek and avoiding nezek, then dealing with tainos that people have on each other and different issues of pikadon and shomrim and things like that. And then the last one, babasra, about partnerships, shutfin, neighbors, yerushos toward the end of the Masechta. Before that, we have about being mevatel mekach, we find a mum in a mekach and something that you bought, so you want your money back. So most of that, the reason babasra, says is last of those three sections of Maseches Nezikin is because it's not really so much based on Psukim like the other two are. Like Baba Kam and Baba Metzia are much more firmly grounded in Psukim. And after the Maseches Nezikin, we move on to Sanhedrin. Sanhedrin discusses halachos of Dayanim, because once we have the rules, now we need Dayanim to implement the rules. Some have, he says, some put Makos as another couple of prakim onto the end of Sanhedrin. He says that's not correct, meaning it sounds like Eluhin and Nechnakin, so you go to Eluhin Alokin. He says, but that's not correct, it's wrong. So it should really come after Sanhedrin, not as part of Sanhedrin, because only a Sanhedrin give Malkus. Then we move on to Shavuos, because very similar themes to the end of Maseches Makos at the beginning of Maseches Shavuos. In fact, the Gemara in Shavuos right away deals with that issue of why Shavuos comes right after Makos. And then Eduyos. What's Eduyos about? So Eduyos is a wild card. Sefer Nezikin is funny because there are a few Masechtas in Nezikin that you could argue have no business in Nezikin. Three in a row, actually. Eduyos, Avodah Zarah, and Avos. Right? Do any of them have any shaychus to Nezikin, to damage, to neighbors, to the... What are any of them? Eduyos is just random teachings. That the Chum got together one day in Karmi Avon and said, anyone remember things that you could teach us that maybe a lot of other people forgot? So this one was made this, and this one was made this in the name of his Rebbeim, and everyone just made things that they remember that other people might have forgotten. And in one day, they wrote Maseches Eduyos. Not bad. It's a good day's work, right? What have you done today? In one day, they wrote Maseches Eduyos. It wasn't one person doing the job, but they put their heads together, and they wrote Maseches Eduyos in one day. So what's it doing here in Ezekiel? So he says, because Eidus is something that's done in front of Shoftim, and we were just discussing Sanhedrin. It's a very strange thing, no? This wasn't that kind of Eidus. These weren't people getting up and saying, yeah, I saw Reuven steal money from Shimon. No, they were being made halachos, that a woman sees dam, she finds dam, she's that I heard that it's made, she's in time, meis leis, mefkidu lefkidu, meis leis, meitalitim, mefkidu lefkidu. Nothing to do with Eidus, it's just stam, halachos. And no, all the place where Beishamai was Mekel, Beisil was Machmir, and where Beisil was Choser, Kedivri Beishamai, that's what Eduyos is, just random lists. Very, very difficult. But the Rambam says, yeah, that's because it's called Eduyos, and it was said in front of the Shoftim of the time, so therefore it's called Eduyos. Then Avodah Zarah, because a judge has to be, what is that doing in Ezekiel? Because if you want to judge anybody, you need to, we spoke about Sanhedrin, if you want to be a judge, you need to be very familiar with the different types of Avodah Zarah. Because some of them you chayev misa for. If you do the wrong Avodah for the wrong Avodah Zarah, maybe you're not chayev misa. So you need to know how every Avodah Zarah works. Nobody else needs to know. Only the judges need to know all the details of every Avodah Zarah. And then Avos. Pirkei Avos. What's that doing in Ezekiel? What does Avos have to do with Ezekiel? Says the Rambam, two very important reasons. One of them, I think, is incredibly insightful if you actually go back and look at... I mean, obviously, everything the Rambam says is insightful, but if you go back and actually look at the Mishnayos in Pirkei Avos, you'll see it in a whole new light. Right? Pirkei Avos is a Musar Sefer. It's good to learn with third graders, fourth graders, adults, anybody. Everybody and anybody can learn Pirkei Avos. Women, men, women, children, Talmidei Chachamim. It's just great Musar. It's a great Musar Sefer. Says the Rambam, one reason we have Pirkei Avos here is to let us know the Amitas HaMesora VaHaKabbalah, to teach us how important it is to trace back our learning to the previous generations. Moshe Kibbutz Torah Misina, Masor Yoshua, Yishul Zakenim, etc. We go down. Remember where it came from. And if you see a shofet in your day, and you say, "Why do I have to listen to that guy? He's not just that guy. He's a representative of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, because he comes from his Rebbe, from his Rebbe, from his Rebbe, all the way back to Moshe, who received it from HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So he's a representative of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So you always have to be mekabel the chum of your generation. That's number one. He says. Second thing he says, the reason the purpose of Pirkei Avos and the reason it's in Seder Nezikin is because Pirkei Avos teaches us Musar and Midos, okay, that we knew, but particularly as they relate to judges. The types of Musar and Midos that we learn in Maseches Avos is more important for judges than for anybody else. Because if I'm a jerk, if I have bad Midos, so it's bad for me, it's probably bad for my wife and kids, but it doesn't really affect that many people. But if you're a judge and you're charged with the responsibility of overseeing justice and promoting justice amongst Klal Yisrael, and you have bad midos, well, that could be extremely destructive. So says the Rambam, Pirkei Avos was written in a way that was geared toward judges primarily. The rest of us have what to learn from it also by looking at Pirkei Avos. But primarily, it was geared toward judges. You ever look through just the first paragraph of Pirkei Avos? Look through how many of these things are related to judgments, are related to just what, to din. Mom, it's just reading through the Mishnayos. It's unbelievable. Havidonis kol es chaver lekav schus. Let me start from the beginning. Have a mesunim bedin is number one, the Rambam points out. Mesunim bedin is the first thing that we're told. Hamidu talmidim harbe asu siyag l'toru. Who does that? Who's in charge of making a siyag l'toru? It's a chum, it's the shoftim, right? And then we go on. Al shos dvar malam amir atorah avodavag nils chasadim, which is critical because that parallels a later Mishnah, which is that the world stands on three things. Din, right? Emes and Shalom. And then we move on. Yemor Shamayim Aleichem. Let's see. Havidan es kol ha'adam lekav schus. Al tas atzmecha ka'orchei adayanin. Ukshiu bale hadin omdim lefanecha yuveinecha karashaim. Who do you think that's talking to? Ukshiu bale hadin omdim lefanecha. How do you make that sound like something that relates to all of us? It sounds like Rabbi Danasi is talking to the dayanim. Ukshenifterim lefanecha yuveinecha kizakayim. Lefanecha, I don't have bale hadin in front of me. Havimar belach koras ha'edim. Whose job is that? It's dayanim. Havizar bidvarecha shemim mitochem yilmadu l'shaker. Careful how you speak to them, lest they figure out by the way you're questioning them what kind of lies to tell in court. That is all dayanim. Snoes harabonos, don't appreciate, don't enjoy too much being in a position of authority. On and on and on. All about have oiv shalom verodev shalom. What's the purpose of a dayan? Is to maintain shalom in the world. I don't know, it's all about dayanim. It's like you see it in a whole new light, the whole Pirkei Avos, based on the Rambam. So the Rambam says, that's what it's doing here in Seder Nezikin, because it's about dayanim. That's what Pirkei Avos is. I don't know, it was a chiddush to me. All right, and then the last Masechta Nezikin is Harios, because everybody's human and makes mistakes, and after we finish talking about dayanim, we talk about what happens when dayanim make mistakes. Then we move on to Kodshim. Kodshim starts with Zvachim, because that's the most basic form of sacrifice, is behemos. And then we move on to Menachos, because in the Torah, Menachos comes after animal sacrifice. Then Chulim, because Chulim is just about Shechita in general, about shechting animals in general, even outside of Karbanos. Then we move on to Bechoros, because again, that's a Seder Apsukim thing. And then Arachim, because once we finish discussing the Kedusha of animals, we talk about the Kedusha of money. Right, if you say Erech Ploni Alai, you need to know how much money to give, and then Tmura, because that's the order of the Psukim, Krisos, because every Avera that Yechayev Kareis for, Yechayev Chatos if you do Bishogeg. So that's why it's in Seder Kachem. Krisos, Yechayev Kareis for a lot of things, right? For eating in Yom Kippur, Yechayev Kareis for all sorts of different things. Why is it Tafka in Seder Kachem? Because in the rule is anything that you do b'mezi, Yechayev Kareis, when you do b'shogig, Yechayev Chatos. And Chatos is in Seder Kachem, obviously, that's a carbon. So that's what Krisos is doing there. Mi'ila, because Mi'ila is a lesser carbon, lesser punishment than Chatos. And then Tamid, because Tamid isn't really halachos about Isser v'heter, it's just about basic order of what they would do in the base of Mikdash every day. This is how they woke up the Kohanim, and this is what they would do next, and this is when they would bring this up on the Mizbeach, they would bring that, just going through what the basic order of the day, every single day in the base of Mikdash was. Midos is to tell us what the base of Mikdash looked like. Something we don't need to know right now, but Mirtz Hashem, we will very soon need to know, because we can't just randomly get a building committee together and a decorating committee and decide how to decorate the Beis HaMikdash. The structure is already laid out for us in the Nevi'im, and the Mishnayos give a little more detail. Kinim is last. Why is Kinim last? Kinim is all math. Why is it last? because it's only when birds get mixed up that you have to worry about kinim. Kinim is if you have an ola and a chatas in this side, an ola chatas in this side, one bird from there flies to there, and then two birds from there fly to there, and then so they all get mixed. How often does that happen? You keep your birds in order, and you don't have to worry about kinim. Also, there aren't so many dinim in Maseches Kinim, so kinim makes it last. Taharos is the last of the Siddurim, says the Rambam. We start with Kelim, because the first thing you need to know is what is Mekabel Tumah, what's not Mekabel Tumah, before you talk about Tumah. Because if something can't even have the potential to become Tameh, so nothing to talk about. Ahalos is the most severe form of Tumah, is Tumas Meis. So Ahalos is something that it's a type of Tumah that can only be transmitted by a Meis, is through Tumas Ohel, so that's why Ahalos. Then Negayim, because Negayim is also Metame Ba'ohel, someone who has Tzara'as is also Metame Ba'ohel. And then Para, because if a person is Tame L'Meis, how does he get out of the Tumas Meis? Paraduma, so we discuss para. Then Taharos, which deals with lesser levels of Tumah. So he says, why is it called Taharos? It deals with Tumah, doesn't it? It's all about, it should be Tumas, Tumas. So he says, Lashon Nekiyah, it's a nice, nicer way to speak. And also, if you really want to be Tahar, you need to know about Tumah. So if you study all these halachos of lesser levels of Tumah, so then you'll know how to maintain a level of Tahara. And he discusses, he has a brief line there about how the Masechta and the Seder have the same name, and that you shouldn't be too bothered by that, but I didn't really get what he was talking about. Like, I remember as a child being very bothered by the fact that there's a New York City in New York State. Is New York a city or a state? How could you? So he says, yeah, there could be a Taros and Taros. It's okay. You could have a Taros and Taros. No big deal. And then Mikvaos is how Tara is accomplished. You want to become Tara, you got to go to the Mikvah. Nidas at the end, because again, it only applies to half of humanity. It only applies to women, obviously not to men. Then really, Nidas most closely related to Zav. So Zavim should have been next, but we put Machshirin first since Vayihi Bayom HaShmini is where Machshirin is, and Zavim is in Parshas Mitzora. So it's the order of the Torah. And then after Zavim, then we have Tevul Yom based on the Pasuk. Yadayim is about Tum of one body part, so after we discuss Tum of the whole body, so we discuss Tumas Yadayim, which by the way also is only Drabbanan, because on a Daraisa level there's no such thing as only being Metame one body part, you're either Tame or you're Tahar. So the fact that your Yadayim can become Tame and no other part of your body can become Tame is purely a Din Drabbanan, so that comes last or second to last. Then Uktzin is very last, because Uktzin, the whole idea of Uktzin is the fact that stems of fruit, when they become like a handle to the fruit to transmit Tumah, to become Tumah, so that's all just based on a Hekesh in a Pasuk. We don't even have any real explicit Pasukim about it, so that's why it's the last Masechta in Shas. Great, so now we got through Shas Mishnayis. So now we have to move on to the Gemara. So says the Rambam, Rabbi Chiya saw what Rebbe had done generations earlier, and he said, well, there's been the buildup of traditions and of discussions in Torah has increased significantly since the days of Rebbe, and the Mishnayos are no longer enough for us to understand all of Torah Shebaal Peh. We need more. So what do we have? So he put together a Tosefta, so that we have more detail. Mishnayos with more details. Toseftas, Brisos, that kind of thing. That's what Rebbe Chiya did. Rav Oshia also similarly put together that kind of thing, where he added Toseftas and Brises. That's why the most authoritative Brises are the Brises that were learned by Rav Chiya of Rav Oshia. They were the Brisa mavens. They were the ones who knew how to show us how to get a few more halachas out of the Mishnah that we didn't have. Wasn't quite as extensive as Gemara, but a little bit more. Rav also wrote Brises called Sifra v'Sifri, and then there were many other Brises in many other different Batei Medrash that the Gemara refers to sometimes as a Brisa that wasn't necessarily learned so widely because it wasn't from the Beis Medrash of Rabbi Chiya of Rabbi Oshia, so it's not necessarily so widely accepted. But everyone was writing Brises. It became a very popular thing to do, to expound on the Mishnayos a little bit in writing Brises. And that's why you have Ki Yasar Aploni Yasav Aisi Masnisa Biyode. What does that mean? Someone came from a Beis Medrash and said, oh, we taught a Brisa in this Beis Medrash. You guys don't know about it because it's not a Mishnah. It's a Brisa that was taught in that Beis Medrash. But the only none of the Brises, even Rav Chiya of Rosh Hashanah, none of them gained quite the widespread acceptance of the Mishnayos. Mishnayos was in every single Beis Medrash. They were studying Mishnayos, and there were conversations about the Mishnayos in every Beis Medrash. There were machlokes about the Mishnayos in every Beis Medrash. That was the core curriculum, was Mishnayos. Yeah, they'd have some Brises also, but Mishnayos was the core curriculum. So comes along Rav Ashi, and to a lesser extent Ravina, and they collect everything between Rebbe and his time, and he collects it together, just like Rebbe did from Moshe Rabbeinu to his time, and they put together Gemara. And the Gemara has four purposes, says the Rambam. Very rare that we actually take a step back and say, why? Why do they include what they included in here? What was this about? So it says there are four things we're trying to accomplish in Gemara. First thing we're trying to accomplish in Gemara is just to explain the Mishnayos. What do they mean? What are the Mishnayos talking about? A lot of times, Chisur and Mechsra, there are words that you need to add in just to understand what the Mishnayos are talking about. Chisur and Mechsra doesn't mean that Rebbe forgot words or that we're missing words from what Rebbe wrote. It just means that they used to know it on their own to add those words into the sentence, but we don't always know it on our own. It's like art scroll, Mashal Madavadoma, like art scroll when they translate, right? They have in the bolded part the translation of the actual word, then they add in explanatory words. What, the Gemara forgot those explanatory words? No, they used to be able to understand. Hopefully we still can understand without the explanatory words, but some people need the extra explanation. So number one is just to understand what the Mishnayos are talking about. Second purpose of Gemara is, okay, I know what the Mishnayos are talking about, but a lot of the Mishnayos have machlokasim, so I need to know how to paskin. So it's psak halacha. Third is, he says, toldos, which means to derive new halachos from the Mishnayos. A lot of things aren't covered in Mishnayos, and we have to figure out, okay, if they argue about that, and this is their logic, so applying that logic to this case, it would mean this is the halacha. So we could derive new halachos from what it says in the Mishnayos. And then the fourth thing is agadita. So he puts it last on the list, but the Rambam has a whole section in the Hakdama to the Pirush Mishnayos to discuss agadita. That Talmud is basically, 80% halacha, 20% agadita or so. So what's agadita there for? Is it there because when you're learning Erev in Daf Yomi, it's very hard, and you need like a day or two to just discuss Shasu Yayin Al Yora, like we had in yesterday's Daf, and to discuss what the positive benefits of wine are, like we have in today's Daf. That's what agadita is for? No, that's not what agadita is for. There's a reason for agadita. Don't think that it's just, it's light, it's agadita, it's fluffy, it's nice. That's not what agadita is. He says agadita is very critical in our Masorah. He says agadita typically is a lot of mashalim that are written in a very simple language on purpose to sort of hide the deep and powerful messages from those who are not ready to receive those messages, not ready to understand them. And those people will think they're just reading cute stories. But someone who's ready for it, who's ready to understand the deep messages in the Agadita, will be able to find it there, and it helps everybody. This way, writing it in this style, it helps to sharpen the minds of those who are ready for it and who are able to study it and find what they need to find, because they have to analyze and they have to use a little bit of a melus. And it also helps those who are fools and who aren't ready for it to protect them from things that they shouldn't be knowing that they're going to use for negative purposes. The Gemara Chagiga says that one of the Chachamim learned Maisa Bereishis from other people who knew Maisa Bereishis, and he happened to know Maisa Merkava, so they said to him, oh, can you teach us Maisa Merkava? We just taught you Maisa Bereishis. And he said, no. So Ram says, well, what's the deal with that? Why would he not teach a Maisa Merkava after they taught him Maisa Bereishis? Is it because he wants to amass all the knowledge for himself and he doesn't want to share it with other people? He says, no, even that's the derech of the worst kinds of fools, not to spread knowledge. Adrabah, if we have knowledge, we want everybody to know. We want to educate. We want to share our knowledge. The world is a better place when there's more knowledge out there. No, Elamai, he realized that they weren't ready for it, that they couldn't. There are certain things, there are certain hidden parts of Torah that aren't for everybody, says the Rambam. So you have to be very selective about who you share it with. And Chazal's way of being selective, even though they wrote it in the Gemara, is by putting it in terminology that's very hard to understand beyond the simple level. So, says the Rambam, given that that's what Agadot is about, you have to daven to be able to reach the level, to reach a madrega where you can understand it. And if you do understand it, you have to be very careful about who you share it with. You don't open up a Kabbalah center or whatever in every city so that you could share the secrets of the Torah, assuming you know them, that you could share the secrets of the Torah with everybody. It's not the way it works. It's given over to a select few. And if you read a story in Agadot and you say, this is crazy, what are they talking about over here? You should realize that the problem is in us. The problem is not in Chazal. Things can be brilliant and insightful to someone whose mind is trained and who's educated properly, but to someone who hasn't been educated properly, it just looks like a foolish thing. And all of these things are a mashal. The Rambam says, I'll give you a mashal. He says, you could have someone who's a brilliant doctor, says the Rambam. He knows everything about medicine in the human body, and you start to describe to him how large the sun is. You know that little ball-y up in the sky? How big the sun actually is and how powerful the sun is. And you start to describe to him how large the earth is. And he's going to say, what are you, crazy? You can't. There's no tape measure big enough to go around the whole earth to measure the whole earth. I know how to measure things. I measure things all the time. I measure medication in millimeters, milliliters, or whatever. I'm always measuring things. How are you going to measure the earth? That doesn't make any sense. And the sun? You're never near the sun. How could you possibly know how large the sun is? If that's not your field, so you can't fathom how we could possibly know that, says the Rambam. You could be a very bright man and a good doctor, but you have no idea. How could you possibly fathom something like that? So you say it's ridiculous. You're just making up bubba-mices that you know how big the sun is, you know how big the earth is. But, says the Rambam, if you're actually educated in those areas, and you know a little bit about space, and you know a little bit about astrology, and you know a little bit about the tools that are used to measure these things, so you know that it's not above Maisa. You know that there is this Chachma that's out there. So it's not because the Chachma's a joke, it's because our minds aren't ready for it. So he says, so too when it comes to Agadate. He says, Kal v'chomer. He says, I give you a mashal of a smart man who's a doctor who's not going to understand certain things. What if you have someone who's a fool who has no Chachma in him whatsoever? He's certainly not going to understand anything. So of course he'll just say that it's a joke. And you have to realize a lot of the stories are just a mashal. The Gemara in Erevin tells a story. The Ram doesn't quote this, but the Gemara tells a story. We just had it in the Daf a couple of days ago about a certain person who was Mora Alacha Bifnei Rabbo. There was a certain Talmud that was Mora Alacha in front of his Rebbe. Just find the story. So he's Mora Alacha Bifnei Rabbo. The Talmud Echad Hayilo the Rabbi Lazar Shor Alacha Bifanav. Amr Rabbi Lazar Li Ima Shalom Ishto. So Rabbi Lazar says to his wife, Ima Shalom, Tamei Ani Im Yotzi Zeh Shenasa. He says, this guy's not going to survive the year because he's Mora Alacha in front of me. Lahotzi Shenasa. And Itaka didn't survive the year. Amr Lo Naviata. So his wife says, wow, that was cool. You're a Navi? How are you able to do that? So the guy was chayiv misa. So Avraham Rabbah Baruch Hanan Rabbi Yochanan, also Talmud Yehuda ben Gurya Shemal, vayirach mena sholosh parsos. His name was Yehuda ben Gurya, and he lived three parsos away from his Rebbe. So the Gemara says, why do you have to tell me these details? Shemo, Shemaviv, how far away he lived? Ela shalo tomar mashal haya. So you should know that this is not a mashal. What does that tell you about a lot of the other stories in Shas? And they are mashal. It's not so crazy to say a story in Shas is a mashal. A lot of them are mashalim. A lot of them are mashalim. So, we just have to be able to understand the messages. Now, Chazal knew what they were teaching us, and they knew people wouldn't understand it, so Chazal warned us, that a person who mocks the Divrei Chachamim is going to be judged by boiling in boiling excrement, which the Rambam says is another way of saying foolishness. The intellectual equivalent of boiling excrement is to be a fool. Your brain is boiling excrement if you're a fool. So that's what it means, that a person's a moron if they mock the Divrei Chachamim. They don't realize how much deeper the Chachamim were able to think than we are able to think. One might think, "Ein lo lakrosh baruchu ba'alama l'dal amashal halacha." That means we should just learn halacha, forget about all other chachma, forget about agadita, and forget about philosophy and everything else. And Ram says that can't be, cannot be taken at its pashat level. I have to explain to you, and this is like his last main thing in the Hakdama. I need to explain to you that phrase. It does not mean that where there is no halacha l'maisa being learned, that there's no God there. Because if that were the case, the yeshiva of Shem Ve'ever had no God there, because they didn't have any halacha. So he says, I need to explain to you what it means. In order to explain this, let's take a step back. Why is man on this earth? So he says, everybody realizes that if, let's say, you have this watch. So whoever made this watch, before they made it, drew a picture in their mind, or maybe even on paper, they drew a picture of exactly what they want the watch to look like. of the minute hand and the second hand and the hour, and they want you know what the face of the watch is going to look like, what the links are going to look like. They had an idea of what it's going to look like, and then they put it together. And they also had a goal in mind. What was the goal? To have a decorative piece that someone won't be embarrassed to wear in their hand that will also serve a function of telling time. Whenever you have anything that's made, there's always some idea, there's some plan that goes into making it. Any artisan, anybody who works in anything, always has some sort of plan in making something. The chair we're sitting on, someone had a plan how to make this chair, and with a goal of its function. When HaKadosh Baruch Hu created every Bria, there was a goal in mind. Why do some bugs have wings? Some bugs have a lot of legs. Some bugs have. There was a goal in mind. Some of the things, it's very easy to understand the goal. HaKadosh Baruch Hu created a chamor because it's very good at carrying things. HaKadosh Baruch Hu created a horse because it's very good at transporting people from one place to another. HaKadosh Baruch Hu created an apple tree because the apples are delicious. Right? There are some very easy ones to figure out. Some are very hard. Why does the centipede need 100 legs? I don't know, but there's a reason for it. HaKadosh Baruch Hu created everything with a purpose. And a lot of times, we're just discovering, you know, as generations go on, we just discover the reasons for certain things. There are certain herbs we thought it was a total waste, and it turns out you grind it up in a certain way, you add a couple of ingredients, and it's a great medication that cures. There's a cure for cancer out there somewhere on this earth. We just haven't found it yet. Right? There's a cure for everything somewhere. We just haven't found it yet. Everything's here, and everything has a purpose in being here. So, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, you know, people always say, why did Hashem make poison? Well, maybe poison to ingest, but maybe if you turn it into a cream and you put it on your skin, it could heal some sort of skin ailment. We don't know. There's a reason for everything. So what's man's purpose? So he says that's much more complex than any other thing that's created in this world, because man is a much more complex creature than anything else in this world. Man does so many things. We run like the horse, and we hold things like the donkey, and we build things like an ant, and we do all sorts of different things that so many other creatures already do. So says Ram, think for a second. Is it shaykh that man was built to eat and drink and to be boel his wife and to? It's not shaykh that man was built to do things that other things are already doing. Our purpose can't be that. Well, if we want to know the purpose of man on this earth, we need to find what does man do that nobody else does, that no other creature does. And what does man do that no other creature does? We think. We have chachma. We have philosophy. We're able to contemplate things. That's man's purpose. Man is here to use his chachma, to develop his chachma, to engage in wisdom. That's man's purpose. Everything else that man does supports that one purpose. Meaning, if the chamor is made not to run, but it's made just to hold things, so why does it have legs? Because the legs help it move when it's holding things, because it's all to support that purpose. Why does it have a mouth that it could eat with? Because it needs to eat in order to stay strong so that it could hold things. Everything else that man does is there to support that one purpose of being able to engage in wisdom. And he says, it's clear that there is an inverse relationship between Gashmius and Chachma. That a person who's too engaged in material wealth, enjoyments that the world has to offer, to the extent that he's engaged in those things, he's going to be disengaged from Chachma. And to the extent that he's engaged in Chachma, it will disengage him from material things. And he says, Chachamim knew this, not just Jewish Chachamim, Aristotle certainly knew this, that Chachma and a resistance of Gashmius go hand in hand, always. Ein habur yirei chet, because without Chachma there's no action, the Rambam says. The next step is, okay, now that I have Chachma, I can put the Chachma into action. But it always has to start with Chachma. Man's ability to act and do mitzvos is based on his Chachma. Ein ama aretz chasid. Person has to have the chachma in order to be able to put things into action. So, says the Rambam, why did Hashem make fools? If the whole purpose is chachma, you know how many people there are that, you know, spend their whole lives just working with their hands or schlepping things, never using chachma really, never philosophizing, never thinking, never contemplating, never analyzing, never really using there's no shortage of fools in the world. Why does Hashem create fools? So he says two answers. First of all, if there's one real Baal Chachma in each generation, you need everybody else there to help him. to, because that chacham is not going to have time to go work the field and harvest it and then grind things up and then cook and make and weave his own clothing. So you need everybody else to do that so that he'll be able to benefit from that. So the Rambam says that's great, but what happens when the fool is the boss? You have the fool running the company and you have a bunch of chacham that work for him. How, why did Hashem make that fool? So the Rambam says that he's also very important. Let's say he decides that his company is going to build a skyscraper one day, and build a building. And one day the chacham is going to be walking down the street, as borrowed from Chazal, the Gemara says, one day the chacham is going to be walking down the street and he's going to need to rest in the shade. So he'll rest in the shade of that building. So that person's entire reason for existence on this earth was to build that building so that the chacham could have a minute of rest. That's how strongly the Rambam believed that the purpose of man being here is chachma. And anything that we do to support chachma, that's the purpose of creation. We're then doing our part in supporting creation, the purpose of creation. So that's number one. The other reason he says is that there are always going to be very few anshei chachma. You're never going to have too many. Why not? Why can't everybody be a chacham? Rambam says it just can't be. It's like asking why there aren't more planets, why there aren't more, you know, it's just there aren't. You know, there are a certain amount of chachma that Hashem, of people that have chachma that Hashem put in this world, and that's it. That's what Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai said about the people of his generation. Reisi b'nei Aliyah ve'ma'atin, im shnayim him ani b'nei heim. Me and my son, we're the chacham, I don't know if there's anybody else. Okay, it's just the way it is. So it would be very lonely on this earth if you just had two people. So the other people are created to keep us company. Keep us, halavai. We're here to keep the chacham company, that they shouldn't be so lonely. So he says that's what it means. It doesn't mean halacha l'maisa. It means the ability to develop chachma so that we could then use that chachma to apply in the actual world, to when every maisa has to be based on chachma. That's my very limited understanding of what the Rambam is saying. And then he finishes off the hakdama to the Pirush HaMishnah. It's like most hakdamas finish off with, why did I write this book? Right, this is hakdama, it's Pirush HaMishnah. So he tries to explain, what did I write the Pirush HaMishnah for? So many hakdamas just do that. He had a little more to say. So he says, okay, Ravashi finished the Talmud Bavli, but he had nothing on Zrayim except for Brachos. He had nothing on Shkalim, he had nothing on Neduyos, he had nothing on Avos, nothing on Midos, nothing on Kinim, nothing on anything in Seder Taras except for Nida. Rabbi Yochanan wrote Yerushalmi, had five complete Siddurim, but nothing on Taras. And with a lot of hard work, you can try to contemplate, figure out Yerushalmi, study Tosefta, Brisos, all that. Okay, that's what we have. We have to work on learning the Talmud. It's a waste of time for us to try to argue on the Amoraim. We should really work on figuring out what the Amoraim said, and that's pretty much what the Gaonim decided to do, that they're not going to argue on the Amoraim after the Chasimus of Talmud. We're going to work on that. Good. Alavei lahosif, mimenuei lagroa. We don't add to what the Amoraim said. We don't take away from what the Amoraim said. We just try to understand what the Amoraim said, and we try to paskin in the machloksim in Amoraim. So Rambam says, so I decided that I'm going to write a book on the Gemara. So he said, and I did. Unbelievable. He said, I put together a lot of my father's chidushim and a lot from the Rimigash. Rimigash died when the Rambam was 5 years old. But the Rambam describes both here and in his Hakdamah to Mishnah Torah about the power of the Rimigash. And he said, if you knew what the Rimigash was, there was no one that lived before him like him, no one that came after him like him. He held the Rimigash was the man. So the Rambam says, so I put a lot of that together, and that's why I wrote a parish on Gemara in Seder Moed, Nashim and Nezikin, and Maseches Chulin. Where is that? You don't know. We lost it. So can you imagine how different learning would be today if we had the Rambam's Perush on the Talmud, on Gemara, in the entire Seder Moed, Nashim, Nezikin, everything they learn in yeshivas, and Maseches Chulin, so when you're starting for Smicha also. Unbelievable. But then he says, then I decided to write a parish on the Mishnayos, and that's this book that I'm presenting to you. Because you can't understand Gemara without understanding Mishnayos. Mishnayos are the Yesod. And it's very hard to just read the Mishnayos because there's a lot missing. And he says, why did I write a parish on the Mishnayos? There are four benefits to my parish on the Mishnayos. Number one, you could understand the Mishnah without having to look in the Gemara now just by looking at my parish on the Mishnah. Normally, if someone asks you halacha, you're going to have to learn through five dapim where we ask, you know, we say seven things that Rami Bar Chama said, one of them that relates to the Mishnah, until you actually get somewhere. So he said, this way, you just get the Tamsis HaDvarim and you'll be able to figure it out. Second of all, I'll tell you how to paskin. There are machloks in the Mishnayos, I'll tell you how to paskin halacha. Third, he says, it's a good introduction to learning a sugya be'iyun. I'll raise the topics that you're going to need to contemplate when you learn a sugya really well be'iyun. And finally, it's a reminder of what you already learned. If you did learn already the sugyas, so it's very hard to chazer over every single gemara all the time. So if you read through my parish mishnah, you'll say, oh yeah, I remember that sugya, that sugya. It will jog the memory a little bit, and you'll be able to remember everything that you learned in the sugyas. So the Rambam finishes off by saying something that at the very, very end he just says, you should know some of the rules of paskening. Beisham Beis Hillel, where he's paskening like Beis Hillel, except for places that we know. And he says, I'll tell you, don't worry. Even when it's a Yachal and Rambam, I'll always tell you how to pasken. I'm here, I'm the Rambam, I'm here to tell you how to pasken. And that's the Akdamas HaRambam to the Perish HaMishnayis. Okay, so now we have to go and learn. Now we have